Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. It can be challenging to talk about sex, and it can be really challenging to talk about the sex that people have later in life. But writer Nancy Price Friedman wants to change that. Lois Smith stars in the films Marjorie Prime and Lady Bird. She reads Nancy's essay, "Yes, We Do, Even at Our Age."
I sat on the examining table in my urologist's office and tried to cover myself with a ridiculous blue paper gown that has become the standard patient uniform in our throwaway society. Surely this wasn't designed with an adult in mind. "Put it on with the opening in the front," the nurse mumbled, probably for the 20th time that day, as she raced out of the room. Or did she say to put the opening in the back? Either way, it was never going to cover my thighs. I hugged the two halves of the gown together as I waited for the doctor. The urologist, who most likely saw a similar scene in every examining room, ignored my open-in-the-front gown and began to ask about my symptoms. When did I first notice the problem? Do I need to get up more than 2 times a night? Do I eat spicy foods? Drink caffeinated drinks? He's a man of my generation, a card-carrying member of AARP, easing like me into the golden years. So I was surprised when his next question was, "Are you and your husband still sexually active?" My impulse was to say, "None of your business." But I knew that would not be an acceptable medical response. I looked him straight in the eye and said, "Yes, we are." I don't know what annoyed me more, his question, or his implied expectation that we weren't active, or perhaps shouldn't be. But later, I found myself thinking more about his question. What constitutes sexually active for a wife and husband who are 70 and 78 years old? A certain number of times a week, a month, a year? I haven't seen any statistics on what people our age do or attempt to do behind closed doors. We are not of a generation that openly discusses our sex lives with our friends, so I had no markers to go by here. Does sexually active necessarily suggest wild passion? Or does rolling over in bed and kissing my husband goodnight count? It doesn't, I know. Not long ago, right after kissing my husband goodnight, I turned back and asked, "Did I kiss you goodnight yet?" Now, does that sound like a person who would remember how many times she's made love in a given period? We place too much emphasis on long-term physical passion. Several years ago, when I was still working, a younger friend at work confided in a fellow colleague and me that she had doubts about her current boyfriend. My colleague and I represented 25 and 35 years of marriage, respectively, and we considered ourselves experts on the subject. The young woman was in a quandary about whether or not to end a relationship of many years with a man we all adored. He was caring and doting, regularly sending her flowers to mark special occasions, an all-round nice and loving human being. What's not to like or love? She explained that after about 5 years together, the passion had gone out of their relationship. Not the love, she assured us, just the intense passion that used to be part of their lovemaking. patiently, like the two mother hens that we were, we sighed and explained that over the years, love mellows. A marriage is made up of a lot more than just the physical. It's more about friendship and genuine caring. It consists of shared experiences and memories, of cheering each other on and holding each other up. Ideally, we counseled, you come to respect each other's strengths and to overlook the weaknesses. Proud of our marriage lecture, my colleague and I exchanged smug smiles. Our friend, however, looked skeptical, and ultimately she broke it off with him. Well, perhaps we didn't know the whole story, but it seemed like such a waste of a promising relationship and such a high bar to have to maintain, to remain physically passionate for years and years. Though afterward we laughed about the passion part with barely concealed envy. Oh, who has the energy? My friend said with a laugh. Who has the flexible joints? I added. Does anyone actually remember sex? A postmenopausal colleague chimed in, shrieks of laughter. Sex at our age is something we're evidently more comfortable joking about than talking about, honestly. But that doesn't mean it's not happening. Despite our declining energy, joints, and memory. Recently, a friend told me a story about the nursing home where his mother-in-law lives. He had heard from the nurses that some older residents were sneaking into one another's rooms in the middle of the night. Isn't that disgusting? He asked. He wasn't sure what was really going on, but he was clear about his discomfort with the thought of elderly men and women wanting to get into bed with each other. Disgusting? Not to me, not by a long shot. Yet the whole issue of sex among older people distracts us from a deeper truth, that simple, tender intimacy is very important as we age. The sort of thing our highly sexualized Viagra-pushing culture tends to minimize or ignore. I told him about the experience of another friend during her recent hospital stay. Her roommate was an elderly woman who looked forward to her husband's daily visits. At night, after he left, the elderly woman cried quietly in her bed because she missed him so much, especially at night, when her hospital bed seemed cold. At home, she said tearfully, we always cuddle close together and hug each other while we sleep. Without him, I just can't get warm. The next day, when the husband returned for his visit, my friend announced that she was going to the visitor's lounge to read. On her way out, she whispered to the husband that he should get under the covers with his wife. Then she pulled the curtain around the woman's bed and shut the door behind her. That's passion and love, but not sex. Yet sex still seems to be the barometer with which we measure an enduring marriage. And increasingly, those of us in our golden years are being told that with a little chemical enhancement, we can go on having passionate sex for years and decades. Recently, my husband came across an advertisement in a magazine for retirees for three DVDs that guarantee to teach creative lovemaking and new ideas for you and your spouse to enhance your marriage. I'd seen the ad, too. Apparently, plenty of industries are banking on the fact that retired couples want to pursue sex as actively as they pursue golf and tennis. And such advertising clearly works. We sent for the DVDs and awaited their arrival. Meanwhile, shortly after my visit to the urologist, I saw my gynecologist, a woman who is about a decade younger than my son. She expressed surprise when I asked if the surgery she recommended would have any impact on my sex life. "Oh, you are still sexually active," she asked, in a voice that just barely masked her surprise. The prevailing attitude about sexuality among older people often strikes me as a throwback to the Victorian era, not to be discussed in polite society. Fine, don't ask. and I won't tell. But a warning to those who do, don't write off my generation. We're not done yet. Physically, cuddling is high on our list. Back rubs are important. Holding hands on walks and in the movie theater is automatic. Yes, we are active. Actively involved in each other and in our love of our life together. But what about those DVDs that promise to enhance our marriage through creative lovemaking? They arrived, as promised, in an unmarked package. And one night we sat down, popped the first DVD into the player, and began watching. We laughed at some parts. I fell asleep in the middle of the second one, and I'm not sure if we ever looked at the third. As he packed them away, my husband smiled and said, "Maybe someday, when we're younger."
Lois Smith, reading Nancy Price Friedman's essay, "Yes, We Do, Even at Our Age." We'll hear more from Nancy after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building. Finds an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Nancy Price Friedman says she wanted to write this essay because she was frustrated at how people around her viewed seniors.
I was feeling rather dismayed and somewhat angry about people's attitudes, whether it was doctors or comments I heard people make. And so I did write it in a lighthearted vein. I didn't want to be too heavy, but I was really getting angry at the attitudes towards seniors and being patted on the head like I was a simple child or something. So I wanted to tell our side of the story.
Her piece was published in 2009, and since then she's seen some progress in how people treat the elderly.
I think people are more aware now than they were 8 years ago about seniors' feelings, particularly in nursing homes. That really concerns me that people are put in a wheelchair outside their door and they sit there all day and nobody touches them or hugs them or does anything. And I think that I've seen, the few times I've been in nursing homes, that people make more of an effort to make contact with the seniors. And just touching and hugging is so important.
Nancy heard from a lot of seniors after her piece came out.
And that was one of the things that people had written to me when they responded to my article, was that, yes, we have a life, and we appreciate that people realize that we're not a bunch of dirty old people because we think about lovemaking, that that's an important part in nursing homes where people are really lonely. They used to get very angry at people who were going in and out of each other's rooms, but people do establish relationships, and people do want to cuddle together at night, and that's not so frowned on anymore.
The importance of touch is something that's been clear to Nancy throughout her 57 years of marriage. And she has a little advice for young people who are thinking about relationships and how to make them last.
There are a lot of stresses coming down the road and just have to talk them through or accept them and find ways to work around them. I just sometimes read articles about young people stressing so over, do I love them or don't I love them? Is this a good idea? Just let it go and go with it, and don't be so serious about analyzing everything.
Nancy Price Friedman. She's a writer and artist living with her husband in New Jersey. After the break, Daniel Jones on what he took from Nancy's piece.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building. Finds an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Dan Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times, says that this essay gets at a time in our love lives that we don't talk about enough.
There's always this cloud of shoulds, you know. What should we be doing at this age, and what should love be at 70? And should it involve sex? There's a hunger among the older portion of our audience for stories that feel familiar to them about how people are navigating long-term marriage and their supposed golden years. It's something that feels invisible, I think, to a lot of the population, but isn't and shouldn't be.
And here's why Lois Smith wanted to read Nancy's piece.
I think the fact that it's all important together is what I like the best. Nothing the matter with physical passion. Nothing the matter with long-term, loving, tender, as she puts it, tender intimacy. The fact that it's all the subject of discussion in the same essay, I like that.
Lois Smith. You can see her in Marjorie Prime and Lady Bird. Next week, Richard Jenkins, who stars in The Shape of Water, reads an essay about a man going to the gym to cope with loss.
My family was gone. Running wouldn't bring them back. Still, if I could catch up, run along beside them for a moment, close my eyes and hope maybe I would find myself in a place where perhaps there would be another chance. I was chasing hope, but hope was running faster than I could go.
Modern Love is a production of the New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Parati, Amory Sievertson, and Caitlin O'Keefe. Additional sound design by Matt Reed. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.